Agreed. I'm glad that you brought up those two points. One, it does take time and we have to investigate and determine the facts. And then the other part, which is the privacy part. And we're often not at liberty to share much information, which can also be a source of frustration.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM and on the local Franklin, Mass. FM dial at 102.9. Here today with another discussion with our school superintendent, Sarah Hearn. Sarah, welcome.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here today.
It's good to be here and around, absolutely. We'll acknowledge that certainly the weather outside is weird, but as we in New England get closer and closer to spring, there's always some changes. Overall, as we've moved from kind of the tight COVID protocols to that spring, and now we're a little bit open, let's hope that stays that way. And our prior recording was on a snow day, and I hope we don't have any more snow between now and the end of the year.
You and me both. You and me both. It does seem like things are changing outside. It's sunny today, and I've seen some robins on the lawns and some early flowers. So hopefully we've turned the corner on winter and spring days are ahead.
And we can move to that openness and obviously still be mindful, because apparently there's another variant that's making its rounds internationally, at least. And we usually are some weeks away from that, but hopefully we are better prepared this time around. So we'll see. But in terms of our conversation today, I think one of your key topics is the overall budget, which is the budget cycle is now upon us.
Indeed, spring is an active and busy time for budgeting, both for the school department and for the town. Right now, it is mid-March, and we are preparing for the school committee's budget hearing on Tuesday, March 22nd. By the time this airs, I think that the budget hearing will have already happened. But the budget hearing is a second meeting as the school committee prepares to approve the budget, which is slated for the school committee agenda on Tuesday, April 12th. And the budget hearing is a second opportunity for them to discuss the budget after the first meeting, which was earlier in March, where I presented the recommended budget. And the recommended budget comes from us making some assumptions about the major budget drivers, including salaries and transportation, out of district tuition costs, as well as health insurance is another one of our major budget drivers. Mm-hmm. And we also work with our principals to determine what the building-based needs are, as well as central office team members like the Office of Teaching and Learning and the Office of Student Services. They put forward requests. And we work with the school committee. So the school committee had a couple of budget workshops in the winter to talk about some of their priorities. And I put that together as financially responsible as possible, while also being sure to advocate for what our students need in putting forward the superintendent's recommended budget. The school committee heard that on March 8th and had a budget discussion. And now we have the budget hearing where they will go line by line through the budget and ask specific questions about adjustments and changes that they may see. It's also an opportunity for members of the public to ask us questions about the FY23 budget. And in terms of kind of an overall message of where we are, although our enrollment has decreased, and for the listeners, our enrollment is decreasing really as a matter of birth rate declining compared to where Franklin was, let's say, 15 years ago. Or beyond, we're bringing in kindergarten classes that are around 285 to 300 students, and we're graduating about 400 or 450 seniors from Franklin High School. So overall, our numbers are going down. We do anticipate and had seen this past year that enrollment at the elementary school has kind of leveled off, but we are going to continue for the next couple of years experience a decline in the middle and high school. And although the enrollment has gone down, what we're seeing, and this is pretty consistent with other districts as well, we're seeing an increase in the level of student needs. Certainly some of that is pandemic related in terms of making sure that we're attending to skill gaps that they may have in their academics, and also skill gaps with social and emotional learning or mental health concerns that we're positioned to address. But some of these needs are also, you know, just reflective of increasing diversity in our community and communities across Massachusetts and across mm-hmm. the nation, more neurodiverse students, students with special needs. We have some, and we're very proud of our inclusive and specialized programs, which have been expanding in the district. And we are continuing to propose some added positions to support those. And we also have seen an increase in the number of English learners coming to the district. And so we have some proposed additions in this budget for English to support English language development for our English learners. The budget will be offset by revolving funds. And so the current budget that the school committee is considering for approval in April is a 3.53% increase over FY22. We're supported too by continued grant funding from the state. The grant funding for schools is called ESSER. And we have had three rounds of ESSER funding, and the grant funding extends through FY24. And that is intentionally being planned for by us here in the district. We know that pandemic recovery is going to take more than 1 year. It's going to take mm-hmm. some time. So we've really tried to be thoughtful about how to apply those funds over multiple years. So if folks in the audience are paying attention to some of the conversations that are happening at the state level, there's some criticism about towns and districts not fully spending their pandemic relief funds. And I would just assure folks that we, and it's not just in Franklin, but also other superintendents that I've talked to, we have plans in place to spend that money, but are really trying to do it thoughtfully to make sure that we're addressing pandemic recovery in the next couple of years. I think importantly too, as we consider those funds expiring in FY24 and not being able to continue them long-term, the school committee and the school district is going to need to be thinking about FY25 and beyond and how to basically look at the return on investment of some of the positions that we've added to support pandemic recovery, think about whether or not they're going to need to continue beyond that, and how those could get folded into the operating budget long-term is something that the committee is going to need to consider.
Yeah, that's certainly, as I've been aware and reporting and following the conversations carefully, that's clearly going to be a challenge because you've always had a tight budget to begin with. And then with the declines, and that's a separate piece, but you've also got a study around the district building use, revalidating the enrollment forecast, which had been given. And then that was pre-pandemic. So were there any changes to that? But being efficient around the building use, which ties into class sizes, which ties into teachers, which ties into budget, health costs and all the benefits associated, and gets back ultimately to the portrait of the graduate, which is really your basis for operation. And thereby the budget was built in mind of supporting the needs of the students. And as you said, they come from a variety of backgrounds, needs, levels of education, and we still have to bring them to that graduate level by the time they leave, ideally. So yeah, it's a moving target, full of challenges. And the budget is just a reflection of that as well. And are you doing the right things? At least from my outside view, it seems you are. You're having the right thoughts, and obviously somebody could still quibble, well, maybe this here, maybe that there. The proof's going to be in the pudding, and you're in the best positions to start having those discussions, and obviously including the community in that as well. So yeah, it's a challenging time, but it needs to be done.
Agreed. And I think I would just impress upon people that this takes time. I think we've become so used to so many things being instantaneous in our world these days. And, you know, that thinking about space needs and facility planning, it's going to take some time, you know, to do that assessment and do that analysis. And we spent a lot of time talking about and looking at the Davis Thayer Elementary School. And this will be much more complicated, involving all of the schools. And really thinking about how space needs have evolved and changed over time, particularly as we think about the post-COVID or COVID world. You know, with COVID, we're all, I think, distancing a little bit more. But as we think about school right now, and I think this is probably here to stay, is this idea of smaller group instruction, providing students with skill-based enrichment or skill-based intervention. If they are above grade level or falling behind grade level, and also counseling supports. So we need more space. It's not just one teacher with 24 students in a classroom. No. Schools are very, very dynamic, and students are flexibly grouped in order to provide some instruction to them. And so that requires us to use space a little differently. So this is a pretty big endeavor. The school committee space needs subcommittee is getting underway to begin having these conversations, you know, starting with the information that we have pulled together recently. You would reference the demographic report, and then also think about what goals and objectives need to be considered and worked towards going forward. Yeah, but it will have an impact overall too, in terms of kind of that financial planning as well.
Sure. Yeah, it will. And I don't think there's any real, you know, magic in there in terms of how much it's going to help the budget, at least based on my understanding. And I'll be following that closely to see. It will have a help, but I don't see it's any magic in there. But to your point, I think going back to the portrait of graduate as well, work has changed and is to even change potentially more drastically because of COVID, where it used to be everybody was required to be in the office or in the manufacturing environment. Clearly, manufacturing has changed. The office now has changed. Much more people are remote and yet still working kind of in the team concept. So being in the small group and that approach is setting the students up for performing more akin to life as we know it going forward. Clearly, we can't educate to what our fathers and grandfathers and grandmothers saw. Those classrooms are probably won't function as well going forward. So yeah, challenging times. And amongst that, you've got some positions that are also open between the district level with some normal changes, as well as you're now hiring the diversity, equity, inclusion administration personnel.
Yeah, so we've got a number of administrative positions that we're looking to fill. Some of this started last summer due to a couple of retirements, and namely the assistant superintendent for teaching and learning retired, and we split that position into two directors of curriculum. We hired one person on kind of a more permanent basis, and then Dr. Linda Ashley applied after the first search did not yield a successful candidate, and has been serving in the role on an interim basis. And so that created a bit of a domino effect because she had been the Kennedy principal, and we ended up appointing the Kennedy assistant principal on an interim basis, and then we hired an interim assistant principal. So there's a bit of a domino effect happening with those three positions. We did just appoint Dr. Ashley as the director of curriculum for ELA and social studies, and Dr. Saravi Connolly as the principal of the Kennedy Elementary School. And so now they're going through a process for the Kennedy assistant principal. The other positions that we are looking to fill are all related to kind of normal personal circumstances that people may find themselves making decisions about, retirements or departures for personal reasons. So we have an active search right now underway for the next athletic director at Franklin High School. succeeding the very talented Tom Angelo, who has been just phenomenal. And I think we talked about Tom a little bit at the last time.
At our last session, yeah, because I had interviewed him, I think, in December, and that was just a wonderful set, which is still available in case somebody wants to go listen to it, because it was a great time.
So those are very big shoes to fill, but I think we have three great finalists who are doing site visits with us here this week, meeting with students and meeting with administration and faculty and staff, so we can get feedback from people and appoint a new athletic director. We are also searching for the next principal of the Jefferson Elementary School. That is going to get underway soon. And when we appoint administrative positions, we typically have an interview team that does the first round, selects finalists to then come in and spend a day in the district, meeting with students, seeing the school, meeting with families and teachers, and also meeting with administrators. Because overall, we want to make sure that it's a good fit between the candidate and us here. So we will be filling that position, and the posting is up now. So that is underway. We will ultimately also be looking for an assistant principal at Jefferson. Again, Kim Booth has announced her retirement. And so we'll secure the principal first and then involve that person in some measure of decision-making related to filling the assistant principal.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The other position that you had mentioned is the Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, which the school committee approved in the fall. It's actually part of our ESSER grant proposal and plan that we had put forward. And the school committee approved a new job description in November. And we posted for the position, and interviews were recently held for that. And I'm looking forward to learning the outcome from that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the vision here, and I think the need has presented itself in terms of our growing diversity within the district, particularly among the student body,
right.
Some proactive education opportunities that we've been seeking to implement through curriculum and instruction and through our policies and practices. And then also, unfortunately, we found ourselves dealing with some pretty significant negative situations that required a response from us. And I think we all want to see a more welcoming and inclusive environment for our students and for our families and for our faculty and staff. And so we're looking forward to having a resource in the district to connect very directly with our students, families, and staff and support our efforts and goals in this area.
And I think you did two presentations, both of which I believe are now available. Certainly I reported on the audio is available, but you did one on the school committee night with multiple voices, which made it really impactful to that extent. And then you and Lucas came to the town council and did that same diversity presentation, and the comprehensiveness of the approach. If people haven't heard that, should spend some time. And certainly the town council one is slightly shorter than the school committee one. They both have their pluses. They're both well worth listening to and show the entire approach which is being done, which is a reflection of the community and society in general. And unfortunately, you're in many cases at the front end of trying to deal with that. And it's not always the best place. It's not the position you were scheduled to do, but it's a reflection of the society. The school is where some of those ends meet and they need to be addressed. So at least it's being done on a planful approach from my perspective.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's intentionally comprehensive. The research really supports that, especially if you're working with staff on professional development, to not have it just feel isolated related to their work, but really that they're seeing that the entire district is undertaking this comprehensively, speaks to sort of a systemic approach and Thank you for the comments around the presentations. Indeed, we approached the school committee a little bit differently than town council, where town council was more of the executive summary, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But anybody could go to the school committee video and see anything in a little bit more depth.
And while we're on the topic, there's also in a related manner an equity audit underway in the district or about to begin. I believe we're, if you're not in it already, you're about to.
We are in it, and it is related to our efforts to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion. The equity audit was approved as part of the FY22 budget last summer by the school committee, and provides us with an opportunity for an external third party to give us some feedback on our efforts. I think it's important that we have this external group taking a look at our approach and providing us with some feedback. I think sometimes it feels like we're trying to do everything. And so ultimately, and hopefully with some targeted feedback from folks who aren't internal, we're able to then create a little bit more of a concrete action plan with some sequential steps and priority areas based on the data and input that they are gathering. So their approach is to look at quantitative data, some of which is available publicly through the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Some of the quantitative, so to speak, information that they're looking at is from some reports that we may have. So for example, we had a report done recently, well, in my time, it was probably 4 years ago at this point, related to counseling and our counseling program. So right. They're yep. able to kind of take a look at some of the internal reports that we've had, and as well as the presentation that was just done that you had referenced. Mm-hmm. So they're taking a look at a document review. And then this week and next week, they're also engaging in some focus groups. So we have family focus groups. People can sign up to participate. One was last night and one will be Thursday morning. We have faculty and staff focus groups, and we have some student focus groups. Student focus groups will be in person, and we also have some faculty and staff in-person focus groups. Families are being held virtually, and we also have some faculty and staff virtual focus groups where the consultants are getting a feel from members of the community about their thoughts related to our efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. They will then synthesize all of this into a presentation style report for the end of May that we can share with the community and then use to take further action mm-hmm. in years to come.
Sounds good. Yeah, it's getting that kind of outside view. I mean, you're certainly in your presentations as referenced between the executive summary and the deep dive. There is enough going on within the district. You've got some existing info that they can utilize, but then kind of getting that current sense from the students, faculty, students will give that outside view in terms of, oh, this is what you're really doing, or at least what seems to be done. So then you can digest that and say, oh, okay, yeah, that makes mm-hmm. sense. Or, I hadn't considered that one.
Yeah.
And then proceed accordingly. Yeah.
Yeah. Can give us a sense of the impact too. Are we having the intended impact with our efforts or not? And what might our stakeholders want to see?
Yeah. Because I think in terms of, we mentioned earlier, or I think you mentioned specifically earlier, not everything you've done at once. And that's one takeaway that I had that I hope folks would, especially if they haven't, go back and watch one of the two presentations. Clearly, when something does happen, one of the bad incidents, people expect kind of, you know, justice right away. And clearly in the process, it can't be done right away. And I grant in the society that we're in today, a lot of, especially with the TV shows, you know, things, the world's problems are solved in an hour. That's not the way it happens. And the approach that specifically, if it's a civil rights violation or a potential event, working through the details, working with both parties, all of that, if people think about it, that takes time. And that's the needed approach, to take the time to do it right. And it's not going to be done overnight. But I think the key point at the end of that is something is happening. People are being hopefully justly determined at some point in time, whatever that is. And again, because of privacy, we may not find out, but that's okay. Something was done, something did happen, and they were treated on both sides, because the victim versus the aggressor, they both have rights.
Agreed. I'm glad that you brought up those two points. One, it does take time and we have to investigate and determine the facts. And then the other part, which is the privacy part, and we're often not at liberty to share much information, which can also be a source of frustration. And, you know, unfortunately, what ends up happening sometimes is that in the absence of information from the school district, because we can't share, people start making, they may have a kernel of information, or they may start speculating, and it can actually be really damaging, I think. And so it's a really difficult spot to be in. But I would point people again to what we had shared in that presentation around our approach. What does an investigation involve? It really does involve our administrative team, talking to the complainant, talking to the alleged aggressors, any witnesses, preserving evidence. If there's any inclination that a crime may have occurred, we consult with the Franklin Police Department per our MOU with them. Mm-hmm. And then our approach always takes into consideration the overall culture and climate of the entire school. And to what extent that may, that incident may be reflective of something larger that needs to be addressed. And then, some measure of justice is going to involve education and perhaps some therapeutic supports as a means of trying to prevent it from happening again.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick MOU, Memorandum of Understanding. So it's a specific agreement between you and the police around certain school matters, because they're not all, they have to be treated legally, but there are special circumstances involved. So you do have that understanding.
Right. And there's differences, legal differences between the school and the police department. So we do have that understanding.
Right. Which I think also gives us a good segue into critical conversations. This is another of a series of conversations you're fostering. And this one coming up Thursday the 24th is the one around social media and its use and or impact of. And even if this is not ready beforehand, so people are listening to it, it'll be available for a recording so people can at least take advantage of that. Because as we were just talking, the culture between media, mass media, and social media certainly has an impact on all of us, not just students.
We're really looking forward to this presentation. It is sponsored by the SAFE Coalition and the Franklin Public Schools Substance Abuse Task Force. And it is all about the impact of social media on youth. Although I would also say, I think adults as well are experiencing some of the impacts of social media as well as we kind of navigate that world. And I think the pandemic accelerated some of the issues with social media, as so many of us, felt isolated from each other physically. And there was more reliance on technology. We have a keynote speaker. Her name is Georgia Wells. She's from the Wall Street Journal, and she's an esteemed tech journalist, and she'll be part of a panel that also includes some Franklin folks, including some of our administrative team. Lily Rivera, our communications director, is going to be on the panel as well. It's being held in person at Franklin High School. There is also a Zoom link as well, and I believe it's being recorded so that folks who may be listening to this, but when Thursday, March 24th comes and goes, if you don't attend, you'll be able to catch the major takeaways following the discussion on the impact of social media and social emotional well-being.
Yeah, and I believe Lieutenant Governor Polito is making an appearance, if that still holds. I mean, her schedule tends to change, but she is touted so far. So let's hope her schedule holds.
Anticipate Representative Jeff Roy and then Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito will also be in attendance that evening in support of the message.
Mm-hmm. And I know from a studio, TV studio perspective, I know Pete was working hard to ensure all the connections, et cetera, for a safe recording and a safe broadcast. So yeah, it should be recorded. And if there's any technical difficulties in the broadcast, we'll be able to have the recording to fall back on later. And I think since we were at the high school, we can continue along that thread, so to speak. The high school has been busy. Certainly the winter sports season is finishing, but there were accolades galore. And there was a special discussion, specifically a school committee approval to allow the cheerleaders to go compete. And that weekend apparently was rather successful.
Yes. So the winter sports season has been amazing again for Franklin. Franklin athletic teams just compete at such a high level, and we're so proud of our student athletes. So very strong season in basketball and in hockey. The gymnastics team had a phenomenal season. Mm-hmm. And I am afraid to list too many more because I feel like I'm going to list them all, but inadvertently leave somebody out. But they just, they really had an amazing winter season. But of note, I do want to point out that our cheerleaders won the national competition in their division recently, having been approved because they won at the state level. There was an approval by the school committee for them to travel to Florida to compete nationally, and they won the national title in their division. So a big congratulations to them.
Yeah, I recall that night because I think the school committee meeting got interrupted slightly because as the cheerleaders left, they did a giant cheer outside the building in applause of the decision to allow them to go on that trip.
It was adorable. We could all hear it up in the chambers, and it kept going. They kept on cheering and screaming, and they were so excited. So we're so happy for them.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And for those who are regular readers of Franklin Matters, yeah, it's rare that I don't have something because something has been happening a lot, specifically during the season. Now, as we're in between, the spring seasons are starting their practices, but all the awards, particularly like the Hockomock League All-Stars, honorable mentions, those are starting to get produced. So, yeah, if we've missed somebody in this audio piece, they'll be getting some accolades in the papers, the press, the social media. And then I believe some of them are usually scheduled to appear at a school committee meeting to get that recognition as well.
Yes. Tonight we have some special guests coming and doing the Pledge of Allegiance at tonight's school committee meeting. And that is going to be members of our DECA team. And DECA just had an amazing showing at the regional competition in Boston this past weekend. And a record number of them have qualified to move on to national competition, which is coming up in April in Atlanta. So congratulations to the DECA team. And we will be welcoming some of them tonight to hear more about their efforts this weekend.
Yeah, they've been quite successful. And I'm at a loss. I can't come up with the DECA acronym. I won't challenge you to do that. We'll find that and put that in the show notes. But the short story is they're effectively kind of a business-related club within the school. And I think one of the tweets that I had seen specifically highlighted the cross-curriculum approach that a student had taken and ended up winning in their category. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, the one that I had seen. I mean, there's been a lot coming out from DECA as they competed, but one I remember seeing had a kind of science and engineering bent to it, and I think mm-hmm. that somebody from the science department had contributed to that individual's success.
Right.
Yep. It does have that cross-curricular component. May I continue and share a few other highlights from Franklin High School?
Absolutely, absolutely.
We did have some successes on the part of some of our students at the Region 3 division of the Massachusetts Science and Engineering Fair, where some of our students won. We have a second place winner for a particular project, and we also had a grand prize winners for a wheelchair project. So we are very proud of several students who competed in the Region 3 division of the Massachusetts Science and Engineering Fair. Our academic decathlon team recently earned second place for the large school league. And this past weekend, the Franklin High School theater troupe, they hosted a competition at Franklin High School. They scored within the top three, and there are several students who received accolades for their performance work, both on stage and behind the scenes. So we are incredibly, incredibly proud of our Franklin High School theater group, and they will be moving on to regionals.
The depth and breadth of the performance is astounding.
It really is. Yep. It really is. It's amazing.
And even the music, I think the Central District Awards were announced recently, or some were getting qualified to state. So there's more coming on, even on the music front. So
it's really hard to keep up with.
It is. And that's a happy problem to have, for sure.
Indeed.
So we've covered from the budget through to some of the awards. You've got a lot on your plate. I thank you for taking time to share all that with the community. Is there anything that you still want to mention in here, or are we set for the moment?
I think we're set for the moment, but I'd be happy to come back before the end of the year and do another installment.
By all means, we'd welcome the opportunity for sure. So thank you again. And to the listeners, thank you for listening along. Clearly, I think if there's something that enticed you along the way, there's more to dig a deep dive in, certainly on the Franklin Public Schools page, or via Franklin Matters, or reach out to superintendent or to myself. We can point you in the right directions if you don't find something. And just a final plug, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.